always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
If this is the roster, is it a good enough offseason to you?
It's good enough in terms of what I thought they could reasonably accomplish in one offseason. Like, they may not have chosen every single player that I would have prioritized. Like, I know you and I talked on Locked On Lakers. Were it a possibility, I would have prioritized Kelly Oubre ahead of Colin Sexton. I understand why Sexton appealed to the Lakers. And I mean, beyond the fact that Sexton is very much Rob's type, he's like his only fan yeah. setting as far as basketball goes. yeah. But like, you know, he Sexton does represent, to be fair, like a tripling down on strengths. And I think mm-hmm. they may be just looking to be a type of offense that never gives you a break over 48 minutes. And if that's mm-hmm. if that's the logic, I understand Sexton over Oubre. If Oubre was actually an option for them, it's not what I would do, but I at least understand it. As far as what I thought they could realistically do this offseason, I think they did it pretty well. Now, these new guys all have to hit. Like, Rob needs to be right about Grimes. He needs to be right about Mamu. He needs to be right about Kessler. He needs to be right, frankly, about Austin at this new price mm-hmm. point. If he is right, and you combine that with Cameron Carr as a draft pick, who thus far they seem to be very, very correct on him.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be fine in terms of trying to make trades and roster upgrades. They won't be as fine as if they had more draft picks and sweeteners and whatnot, but I think they will be okay if he's correct, because I think those will be contracts that you can move. He just has to be right.
Yeah, I think the Lakers have enough positional depth. I don't know if I would go so far as to call it talent, but positional depth to look at Atlanta, look at Kuminga in the face and be like, we aren't so desperate that you get 4 years, $80 million from us, you know? And you know, we'll see to what extent that they are, you know, they're capable of not blinking in those negotiations. Cause that's really what's going on here. Like, I've really not laughed at, cause I don't want to make it seem as if I'm laughing at the reporting. Like, the reporting that's coming out is legitimate. You know, when it's Jake Fisher saying that the Lakers aren't necessarily shopping Jared Vanderbilt, it's like, yeah, that is definitely what he's hearing. It's just that people are lying to him, you know, this is lying season, you know? And, you know, when I hear that, the Lakers, I heard over the weekend that they aren't like so desperate to get a Jonathan Kuminga. It's like, yeah, I could honestly see that. Like, that makes a lot of sense. However, they don't have a starting power forward or starting caliber power forward. So, like, to a certain extent, I'm going to push back a little bit against some of the stuff that even I am hearing there. And that's where, like, we are in lying season. Deadline week and the weeks leading up to trade deadline, lying season. Draft mm-hmm. week and the week leading up to draft week, lying season. Right now was, you know, all summer, everybody is just straight lying to each other. And it's on us to kind of sort through some of that mess. Last thing before we get to a couple of questions here to wrap things up. You have mentioned a couple times over, and I agree with you, that this was not a single year plan. I think this is a multi-year project to eventually arrive, hopefully after next deadline, or maybe not next deadline, or after next offseason, arrive at a place where you are that inner circle contender. I think that is pretty clear that that's how Rob had planned this out. And the best evidence of that is that both Mamu and Austin's contracts both dip next year at a time where I think the Lakers are hoping to use their non-taxpayer mid-level exception again. How high a standard are you setting for, like, is that a realistic 2-year plan? I think you went into this summer with clear eyes about what was realistic. Is becoming a inner circle contender with what the Lakers will have at their at their, you know, what they can actually utilize. Is that realistic to hope to be in that realm with San Antonio, OKC, New York, these inner circle contenders?
I don't know if Rob's going to be able to pull it off, but it has to be realistic because that is, that's the box he put himself in. And like, that's when you spend as much time as he did over the last few seasons, kind of kicking the can down the road, and for what it is worth, I feel like this is the first off season where Rob said big things are coming and he actually meant it. Like the past few off seasons, I feel like the organization had decided that LeBron and AD, we had gone as far as we can with this group, and agree or disagree in some respects, I don't even care what your answer is. That's clearly what they thought. I think really the larger problem was they were too afraid to move off it despite not believing in it anymore. And they just sort of let themselves sit in limbo without committing to anything. And in the past, when Rob talked about, you know, looking to the future, or, you know, this offseason we'll have this many picks, yada, 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 I think a lot of that was just stalling until, I don't know, LeBron decided to leave or Luka Doncic falls in your lap, like something like that. This offseason, I think Rob, and you can clearly see it by the moves that were made, was serious about doing things. And that's great, except now you also, because of the timeline with Luka and Luka being in his prime, you have to put together a top shelf competitive team within basically three transaction cycles. Like, you have to. That's the whole point of having Luka, you know, in his prime, like, you know, a no brainer top five player in the league. Like, you have to make it work. Can he pull it off? We'll see. I do think, again, the bones of this roster is a good starting point. And that's why I'm satisfied with what they have done thus far. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And Rob has to prove that he's capable of doing it.
Yeah, I think. So going into this offseason, I actually had a higher bar. Shocking, I know, than most people. And part of the reason that I had a higher bar was because of the caliber of players that the Lakers were letting walk for the sake of this plan, right? Like, if you're building a roster, a basketball team, and you don't have LeBron James as a part of your plan of that basketball team, your plan better be pretty fucking good. You know what I mean? Like, if you're... With LeBron playing at the caliber that he was still playing, you know, the last time we saw him wear a Laker uniform, it'd be one thing if he was clearly geriatric. It would be one thing if he just didn't have anything left in the tank. But he helped you win a playoff series, and against a team that you were underdogs against, right? Like, they went into that series against Houston, pretty heavy underdogs. Thanks, Vegas.
Although a lot of those lines were set before people knew that Durant wasn't going to play. I think if the lines people had known that KD would basically miss the whole series, at the very least, I don't think Houston would have been heavy favorites. I actually think the Lakers might have been favorites heading into this if people really knew Durant's not going, for all intents and purposes, he's not going to play.
I honestly thought they mispriced the series. I thought that the Lakers should have been favored outright. But regardless, they won that series. LeBron helped win you that series, did so without Luka Doncic. And for you to go into the next offseason and essentially not talk to him, right? Like, ghost him basically for the first couple of weeks. And you're doing that for the sake of
I think he was ghosting them too. I think it was pretty mutual ghosting. And they were tired of each other. Like, they were part of the reason that LeBron's not here is he didn't want to stay. Like, beyond what the Lakers didn't want, LeBron didn't want to stay.
But still, like, he clearly wasn't a part of their plans. However LeBron felt about, like, whether the Lakers were part of his plans, I think we now know that he wasn't part of theirs. Yep. So if he isn't part of your plans, and Marcus Smart isn't part of your plans, and Rui Hachimura isn't part of your plans, and Luke Kennard isn't part of your plans, then, like, your plan's got to be really, really good. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the question I keep asking myself. Do I believe enough in this plan to have said goodbye to LeBron the way that the Lakers did? Where do you land on that one?
I feel like the relationship between LeBron and the Lakers had just run its course. Like it had been a marriage of, as I put it, a marriage of inconvenience for the last 3 or 4 years. I think both sides have been hoping for something better than each other. Like, could you theoretically have made it work another year or so? I guess. But like, I think both sides, there's a lot of focus on how LeBron felt unappreciated by the Lakers, and some of where he's coming from, I understand. Some of it, I don't think he's being reasonable, but I think also the Lakers felt unappreciated by LeBron. Like, there were things that we did for you that never seemed to be enough either, like namely drafting your son. And so it's clear, the Bronny piece of this, I don't give a shit about the nepotism, like, at all.
Yeah.
Like, J.R.
Smith. Fine, too.
Well, yeah. The Knicks brought in J.R. Smith's brother to be on the team to keep J.R. Smith happy. And with all respect to two-time NBA champion and one-time Lakers NBA champion J.R. Smith, he ain't LeBron. So, like, if J.R. Smith can be made happy in this way, you can do that for LeBron and Bronny. But the piece of this, though, that I do think required appreciation from LeBron is any other year, they either would have traded that pick outright or drafted a stash guy because they needed to use that roster spot on an NBA player. Like, if they wanted to be competitive. And like, I don't mean that as a slight against Bronny. I'm just saying they did not have, practically speaking, a roster space available for a project. They did that for LeBron. And like, things like that, I think from their perspective, need to count. And I don't say this to take the Lakers side over LeBron's or whatever. I think they've both had varying degrees of unreasonableness. I just feel like we had reached a place, like, they never planned to be together for 8 years. Like, they never planned on this going as long as it did. And I just feel like maybe you could have done more backward bending and whatever, but it just has felt to me like they were ready to be done with each other. And also, there's a part of me that feels like, with the reports that LeBron is doing a documentary about his final year or so in the league, you know, staying with the Lakers isn't the sexiest story if you're looking for story arcs and things like that. I'll just
say. Yeah, no, I completely agree that both sides were absolutely ready to move on. And like, I always kind of say, if this was 2K, I would have kept LeBron, but this isn't 2K and you can't just turn off chemistry, you know? But like, I also think a part of why LeBron was ready to move on from the Lakers is because of some of the stuff that we've talked about, where like Rob would promise stuff and then like you would say, oh, well, you can't buy a house that isn't for sale. You know, like, technically speaking, depending on who you talk to, Walker Kessler wasn't for sale going into this summer.
Yeah.
Right. But the Lakers basically said, just as any really, really rich person can say, what price is your house for sale at? Right. Like, my house right now, not on the market, but if somebody shows up and says, hey, I'll offer you $3 million for your house, I'd be like, babe, we're moving, you know? And that's essentially what the Lakers did with Walker Kessler. It was like, yeah, he's not technically really for sale. The Utah Jazz, like, have you seen their center rotation right now?
Yeah.
It is an adventure. But the Lakers basically said, we will make your house for sale. And that is something that I think LeBron would have wanted the Lakers to do at the tail end of his time with Anthony Davis, was like, you keep on telling us that the prices are unreasonable, but like, I'm still pretty good at basketball. Could we actually give it a real try at building a roster here? And I think enough of that, as well as some of the other stuff that we've talked about, Baxter Holmes had a really good, prescient article about some of that relationship. And yeah, by the time we arrived at the summer, both sides were kind of like, we'll talk to you when we talk to you.
Yeah. I mean, I think the last few years they had decided that LeBron and AD, we can't go any further. Again, agree or disagree, it's clearly what they had decided. There's certain ways that I understand them, but you know, the flip side is LeBron could have always left too. Like, you know, and he wasn't staying purely out of loyalty. He was staying because he wanted to be in LA and he liked the setup. And by the way, that's not a dig at LeBron. Like, it's fine. Like, not everything has to be perfect and about pure basketball reasons. Like, but just, I think everyone has to acknowledge what was going on. It was always super transactional on both sides. And eventually both sides ran out of shit to transact from each other. so we've moved on. I don't mean that to say they won't miss LeBron at all. I think there will be games where they definitely miss LeBron. This is just the longer the Lakers went with more reports of no communication between them and LeBron, the more obvious it always was he's leaving. Because once you enter free agency and you don't have a firm number with the Lakers, then LeBron's money is basically going to be the same with the Lakers as it is anywhere else. And if you remove the component of the Lakers being able to pay him more, then he's clearly out the door. Like, clearly.
Yeah. Let's look through here and find a couple of questions. Kirk Hamilton asked a good one here. Without an immediate plan, the Ayton trade looks so bad. We could have had the best center roster in the league. Spilt milk, I guess. I mean, it's impossible to say, because I do think anytime you can get your hands on Washington Wizards draft capital, you do that. Same time, that is a steep downgrade to go from DeAndre Ayton as your primary backup to Kevon Looney as your backup.
And, well, I consider Mamu the primary backup.
Yeah, like he's like that kind of situational. Like he might play some with Walker. He might play some as a small ball five. He might play some with Kevon Looney. But I do think what do you think about the DeAndre Ayton trade?
Well, to begin, I would need to know, how does Ayton feel about being a backup? And what Ayton says right now might not be the way it always is throughout the season. Like we saw a lot with DeAndre, him saying the right things and at times accompanying those right things with actual actions, but then it would wax and wane. And he clearly sees himself as a starter in the league. And I think he is. I think he's, at this point in his career, he's more of a low-end starter, he's a starter.
Best center in the league,
I would say. He's clearly a starter. And I think with the Wizards, he will have more opportunities to start between AD maybe getting moved and, unfortunately, the injuries that have to be priced in with AD. I think he'll have more opportunities, but I think they were concerned about being able to keep AD motivated in that role. But to Kirk's point, immediate plan with those seconds, or I guess rerouting Jaden Hardy, something needs to be afoot relatively soon for that to make sense. Then they have to be like next week. They're not playing basketball till October, but something needs to come of that move that is tangible. Otherwise, if nothing else, it would have been worth waiting to see how Ayton reacts and then moving him.
Yeah, essentially, if they use either of those picks on players, I will be looking at that trade a little sideways.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's see. Laker Rob 2814. With all the shooting guards on our roster, what do you think of trading Austin for an elite defensive offensive small forward for draft assets to round out the team?
Unless they have an immediate plan to flip the draft assets, I don't think that's what you can do right now with Luka in his prime. That being said, would I be open to trading Austin for an elite defensive, 3-and-D wing? Absolutely. Because I think that would make more immediate sense in terms of A, what you need around Luka, but also I'm of the opinion, one of the big concerns that I have about this much money being allocated to Luka and Austin, it's that it's a lot of money allocated to very similar players. And I think the best roster constructions, your best and second best players, or your best and your highest and second highest paid players, they will offset certain things that the other guy doesn't do, whether in skill sets, position, whatever. Luka and Austin are very similar players, like in the best ways and in the ways that aren't as positive. It's not even so much a commentary on Austin. I think he's a really good player. I don't know if he's necessarily as good as the Lakers are counting on him to be, but he's a very good player. I just wonder if that's the best way to allocate those resources. So were that type of player made available for Austin? Yeah, I would definitely consider it.
Yeah, like I would, put it slightly differently in that, like, normally your second highest paid player fills in some holes that your best player leaves. And I don't know what holes Austin fills in that Luka leaves,
None to me.
One topic of conversation that I had frequently over the weekend was there's a lot of kind of speculation about Austin's future with the Lakers, depending on how the playoffs go next year. Like it's fair speculation, I think, because they are bereft of first round picks that they can trade.
Excellent.
And he is like the only probably like movable high end asset at that point. And, you just kind of adding two and two to get to four.
Yeah.
Andy, this is always fun. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, there's a lot on Austin, and he's going to be evaluated differently, scrutinized differently, and rightly. I mean, like, his station has been elevated in terms of both responsibility and price point.
Yeah, yeah. And like, look, I would love nothing better than to, like, sit down, have this same conversation a few months into the season and be like, wow, look at these guys go. But I do think that this is something that the Lakers and the league are kind of bracing for, is if the Lakers don't, like, because again, the bar when you have Luka Doncic in his prime on your roster is championship contention. Yeah. And that's the level that everybody is going to be held to from here on out. And, you know, in order to get there, you're going to have to make some tough choices. And I think that the tough choice that the Lakers and people around the league are kind of bracing for is, what's Austin's future in all this?
I think it is a logical and fair question to ask. Hopefully Austin plays well enough that it becomes the type of good, difficult decision. And you're in a place where maybe you can have your cake and eat it too. Either it's working well enough with Austin that you don't have to do anything, or you have to make a change that isn't necessarily condemnation of Austin. It's just, we need certain skill sets, and Austin's playing well enough that you can move him. Again, if he plays well, a lot will, I think, offer the chance to work itself out.
Yeah. And look, worst comes to worst, the Lakers had a better offseason than the Boston Celtics. So, like, that's, you know, it's got to be worth something.
Playoff P, baby.
Oh, man. I would love to at some point have a conversation about, like, the reactions to, like, how mass media would have handled the Lakers trading Jaylen Brown compared to how everybody handled the Celtics trading Jaylen Brown was something else.
It was funny too. Like, Paul George, who, you know, all jokes aside, easy target, he's obviously a very good player and he's had a very good career.
Yeah.
He's been the flashpoint of a lot of really big stuff in the NBA. Like, remember, the Lakers were so sure they were going to get Paul George like seven years ago. They didn't trade Brandon Ingram for him because they were like, why bother? He's going to be here next offseason and we can keep Brandon Ingram. And it was the same offseason that they got LeBron, and instead he stayed in OKC because Russell Westbrook threw a hell of a party.
He's like NBA.
He's been traded for a lot of really good players. Like,
yeah. Like, he, like, thinking of Paul George's NBA Forrest Gump is a fun way to kind of go through this, right? Where he's like, I met 13 presidents, like, whatever it is. It's like,
yeah. Like, Paul George could kind of be his own 30 for 30.
And then in a playoff game, you could go 0-30. Ooh. Andy, this is always really, really fun. I enjoy doing these home and homes. Thank you very much for putting this together. And anything else that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, just a lot of guests coming up on Locked On Lakers. Tony Jones was recently on doing a scouting report of Kessler and Grimes and Sexton because he's covered both with the Sixers and the Jazz. Got an upcoming show. I've made a declaration. It will drop Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific time. So that's when my show with Anthony's coming up. Got Mike Trudell coming up. Jovan's coming up. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have a scouting report of Zaire Williams coming up sometime next week. So, like you, Anthony, keeping the content machine rolling.
Almost there. No, we're not almost there. We are just at the doorstep of the worst stretch of the sports calendar.
Yes.
So Hell, welcome man. To mailbag season.
Well, that's when you and I are going to be doing a lot of shows together just because we're killing desperately so much time.
Exactly.
Now all right, everybody. Home.
Are you okay? We're not okay. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications both for the show and for YouTube. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get it. And again, that promo code is HMA on Prize Picks. Use that promo code. Set a $5 lineup of your own. Get $50 worth of free lineups. There will be a link in the description of this show that you could use to get the Prize Picks as well. And until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Andy Kamenetsky. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. I'll talk to you tomorrow.